honored to have Monique Wittig be part of our community here at the University of Arizona. To introduce her to you, I would like to introduce Julia Belen, who is a graduate student here in Comp Lit. Julia?
I think these things are dangerous. I guess I'll just hold it here. Oh, there you go. Okay, I see. There we go. Okay. First of all, I want to say that Sandy Zeig is reading along with Monique Wittig. And Sandy is a mime, author, dancer, teacher, playwright, actor, choreographer, filmmaker, acrobat, translator, stage director, and producer. Is that enough to impress you yet? Sandy's also the recipient of the 1990 Obie Award, the McDowell Colony Fellowship. She has worked with Jean-Paul Sau, Mark Daniels, Jackie Reynal, I think, Peter Sellers, and of course, Monique Wittig. Her works have included The Impersonators, which I've had the good fortune to see at least on film, and Behind the Heart, Nixon in China. Monique is perhaps a little more familiar to most of us here. We can't mention Monique without at least mentioning the Prix Médicis, which she received in 1964, the most prestigious of French literary prizes. We all know that she has written many plays, short stories, literary criticism, and translations, or at least I hope you know that, far too many to go into. Let me merely mention a few of her books, L'Opoponax, or The Opoponax, Les Guerrières, translated by the same name in English, and Le Corps Lesbienne, Virgile Non, also, which was translated across the Acheron. Along with Sandy, the two of them have worked together fairly extensively. They wrote Brouillon pour un dictionnaire des amantes, which is translated Lesbian Peoples, Material for a Dictionary. And there's another one, a play. Le Voyage sans fin, which Sandy translated and worked in, translated as The Constant Journey. I want to say of both of them that their art is both honestly courageous and courageously honest, and that for me, taking Monique's words, I will say that they interrupt me. You sing with strident voice your certainty of triumph over my death. You do not heed my sobs. You drag me to the surface of the earth where the sun is visible. Only there, at the exit towards the trees and the forest, do you turn to face me with a bound. And it is true that looking into your eyes, I revive with prodigious speed. Help me welcome Sandy Zeig and Monique Wittig.
Can you hear me? Can you? Pas du tout? Louder?
Yes.
Then I will have to make faces. I wanted to talk a little bit about The Constant Journey before we start reading, because you will see some images on video, which may be a little disconcerting. So The Constant Journey is a kind of rewriting of Quixote and Panza, I mean, the book by Cervantes. I won't call it otherwise. It was first played at Goddard College, where we had a grant to produce it. And then we had two grants to produce it in France, at the theater Renaud Barrault. That means Simon Ben-Musa allowed us to produced that play at the theater, Barreau. I don't want to forget any. So to explain a little bit of how it worked, I wanted to read what a short note, a kind of introduction. I have the feeling nobody can hear me. No? All theater functions around the same themes used over and over again. Here, the undertaking necessitates a double justification due to the fact that the actors of the roles are not men. It's not a mere transposition, as I have been reproached. If the audience of the Constant Journée is convinced at the fall of the curtain by these new characters of Quixote and Panza, it is that they have assisted scene by scene to the refabrication of heroes of a new genre. It's true that the success of this play requires active spectators capable of recreating a fable in its entirety. As is usually the case, they know it by heart, since each episode is faithfully taken from Cervantes, rewriting, including the scene of the puppet show and Quixote's rewriting, since in the second part of Cervantes' Quixote, he knew his own adventures and took the author's place. It seems provocative to me to have precisely chosen in order to do this such typically masculine heroes. So true is it that I am sure that at least half of the public in its readings and its phantasmic projections recreates itself in hero as well as heroine. That is to say, in one's reading as in one's dreams, when thinking of oneself, I think that we do it beyond the sexes. That's all I wanted to say about that, because it would be too long otherwise. I want to give you a list of the characters, of course, because this transposition of Quixote in heroes of another genre had some repercussion about the other heroes around. That means Quixote had a mother, a sister, sister one, a sister two, an aunt, and they're also galley slaves, like in the book of Cervantes, and Quixote, which was originally played by Saint-Isaac here. The list of the scenes include, in the order that you will see them, the approach to the fortress, the books must all be burned, the giants' books, the windmills, the books that combat injustice, In Search of Dulcinea, the forest, a mime about the chin washing, the galley slaves, the puppet show. And we'll stop the play here because I'm afraid it will be too long. But after that, there is Back to the Village, Quixote and Cage, the books and madness. I think we can. I should also say that the play was operated on a dissociation of the sound and of the action. I wanted both to use the techniques of film and to take the advantage in the dissociation of sound and action, that because the heroes were not men, it was kind of interesting to play with that device. And we'll see that the sound is whispered, not to recognize a sex in the voice. You will hear it, rather.
Can we help you with this?
Should we begin? Yes, because on n'entend pas.
Should we test this? We're getting an echo, or are we okay? It's okay? Okay, so one other thing. I'm playing Quixote, and Monique is playing Panza. When we're not playing, because there are other characters, then we will indicate that to you by looking at the screen. Okay. There are several sequences where we won't be speaking because the other characters, the mother, the aunt, the galley slaves, will be in the voiceover. And so we'll just pass by those. Okay. So.
Je vais le tenir parce que je crois qu'on entend bien.
Ok. Oui. What do I see appearing before me?
Well, I don't see anything.
There, that superb castle on that rocky peak.
I see the peak. It's been worn away by all the wind.
Yes, but look at the walls of the fortress. No wind could shake them.
As for the fortress, I don't see it.
Do you mean to say that you don't see that castle with sparkling roofs?
No, your worship. I can see a crumbling ruin that must be used as a shelter for sheep.
Sheep, undoubtedly. Deceive yourself as much as you like, but be silent. I must collect myself and prepare a response to the welcoming speech that will surely be addressed to us.
Quixote, maybe the building is an inn. I'd like them to welcome us with wine and a roasted lamb.
Be silent, I tell you. How can you speak of food at a moment like this?
How? We have not eaten since this morning.
Curb your appetite, Panza. Haven't you noticed how light your spirit is when you fast?
Quixote, when I left with you, I did not pledge myself to not eating.
Be patient. This magnificent castle will welcome us worthily.
There is as much lamb as there is castle. I'm afraid I am already full.
Do you have another complaint, friend?
I want the island you promised me, even though we have been walking for a good long time and we have not seen one yet.
Panza, how you lack faith. Have I not told you that one day I would be at the head of an empire?
You did.
And when that occurs, I would make you a present of an island.
Ah, when that occurs.
I'll give you a big island.
Show me even a little tiny one.
This is called The Books Must All Be Burned. The next scene is the giants. Keep in mind, Panza, that what they call madness, I call reality. But, will you say, isn't it proof that you are mad if you are the only one to think that something is real? I ask you, Panza, how does the fact that I am the only one to think that something is real prove that I am wrong and that everyone else is right? Couldn't it be that they are all mad while I alone am reasonable?
You can't deny that the sheep we just fought were sheep.
Sheep. Really, Panza, you are naive.
I saw them. I saw the wool. I saw the hoofs. I heard them bleating.
You think you heard them bleat. But in reality, beneath their bleating, there was the voracious howling of a wolf.
But they bleated.
That you heard them bleat is one thing. That does not mean that they really bleated.
What do you mean, my dear Quixote?
Panza. Panza. You didn't hear them howl like wolves. But you didn't see their sinister and cynical smiles. And you didn't see their long teeth, either.
If I had seen long teeth on those sheep, I would have taken them for monsters.
Monsters. That's exactly what they were. Didn't you see their disproportionate size, swollen as they were with blood and misfortune? Vampires, sowers of misery. When I say wolves, it is only a fit speech.
Still, Quixote, those sheep in question had balls of wool on their backs, and even bigger ones on the sides. I was caught on one of them. That was wool. There is no question. I still have some on me.
Panza, have you asked yourself why everyone is so hostile toward knights errant? Do you honestly believe that there is no longer any injustice in the world? No more oppressed people? No more children to save? No more women to succor?
What?
Can you not see that the only ones who are actively concerned about fighting these things are knights errant?
Really, with success.
With this in mind, how can you be surprised that there is hostility toward knights errant? The mighty of this world are hostile to knights errant. They persecute us because we are the only obstacles to their absolute power.
But who are they? When did you meet them? At least give me a name.
Well, I call them giants, and you call them monsters. I tell you, Panza, we must put to death the arrogance in the giants. The next scene is Quixote's books.
Durable. Tant en voici un parement énorme.
The next scene is the books that combat injustice. Okay, the next scene is called The Windmills. Having a vertical hole problem. Okay. See, my dear Panza, if soon we are not guided by good fortune, look at those monstrous giants. I intend to do battle with them. There are more than 40, but with my lance, I will make them less than a mouthful. Panza, with the spoils, we will begin to get rich.
What giants?
Those you see there, with their long arms. Some giants have them nearly 1 mile long.
Take care, Quixote. Those giants are windmills, and what you take for their arms are the sails that makes the millstone move by wheeling around.
Need you be so blind? Rub your eyes and look at their arms in proportion to those teeth and sinister smiles. Listen to their sneering and provocations. They are giants and as monstrous as can be. I am going to attack them alone. If you are afraid, kneel down and say your prayers while I engage in this fierce and unequal battle.
Wait, Quixote, watch out, come back. There are windmills that are going to send you through when the sails start turning. Quixote, no, there are not any giants, not a single one.
Do not fly, vile creatures. It is Quixote, single-handed, who assails you. Even though you have more arms than Fenja and Menja together, you shall pay. Dulcinea, dear mistress, cast your eyes upon your servant. Consider my danger. I commend myself to you so that you may give me assistance.
You must have windmills on the brain to attack real and unmistakable ones, my poor Quixote.
Silence, friend Panza. Matters of war are subject to more brutal change than anything else in the world. The next scene is called In Search of Dulcinea. And I am indeed eager now to engage the unequal Dulcinea to share my adventures, just as it should be, if she wants to share the glory. And we will undoubtedly perform the most perilous adventures, because nothing affirms the courage of knights-errant more than fighting with a peer and companion at their side.
Your worship will have a hard time convincing Aldonso Lorenzo, whom you have baptized Dulcinea del Toboso, to leave her farm in order to follow you on the road. And I, Panza, would not follow you if you would pay me less than Tomas Carrasco, the farmer.
Do not forget, Panza, that Dulcinea has always shown an interest in the chivalrous deeds of the past.
Not in front of me.
Though you do not know it, I can swear that it is true. But continue. When you gave her my letter, did she kiss it? Or put it under her head? Did she do something worthy of that letter? What did she do?
When I went up to give it to her, she said, I can't read it till I have finished what I have here.
I recognize her wisdom. Undoubtedly, she wanted to enjoy it at her leisure. Go on, Panza. What questions did she ask concerning me? What did you reply?
She did not ask me anything, but I told her how your worship was doing penance for her service, sleeping on the ground, never eating off a tablecloth, nor combing your hair, and weeping and cursing your fate.
You spoke wrong, friend Panza. In saying that I was cursing my fate. On the contrary, I bless it, and will bless it all the days of my life, for making me worthy of loving the high Dulcinea del Toboso. What did she do after reading my letter?
Quixote, she did not read your letter. It was enough that I told her of your worship's love for her. She told me to tell your worship that she kisses your hands, and that she prefers to see you than to write to you. She begs and orders you to leave this wilderness right away and set out immediately on the road to El Toboso because she has a great desire to see you.
The forest.
Dear Quixote, it's too dark. It's dark that I cannot even see the trees. This must be the deepest forest in the world. I feel like I am in prison.
Come now, Panza. Can you experience greater freedom than in the heart of this wood?
if at least we were lying asleep in soft grass.
Panza, go to sleep. I will keep watch.
Did you hear that? I'm lost. They're coming to get me.
Saddle Rocinante quickly, Panza. I'll let the whole world know that Quixote is more courageous than Charlemagne and Phyllis of Flanders combined.
I know that they approach us because of the angle of the Big Dipper.
How do you know? You can't even see a star in the sky.
It's a fact that it's dark. But fear has many eyes that everywhere, even underground and all the more in the sky. Ah, dear Quixote, you knighthood must devote yourself to confront human adversaries, not supernatural causes like the ones I hear that make my teeth chatter.
My courage is even more steadfast because the danger is greater.
But did you hear that hideous sound? Quixote, if not for yourself, at least for me, wait until day before you fling yourself into this adventure. I left my husband and children for you, and now you want to abandon me in the middle of a wood? You would leave me to be devoured by monsters or giants that you yourself admit exist?
Come now, Panza, enough emotion. Quickly saddle Rocinante. I've driven my spurs into Rocinante's flanks in vain. She doesn't move from this spot. She leaps in place, but she advances.
You see, Quixote, that's a sign that you must stay here until day.
It's a fact that Rocinante cannot move, so I must wait here until the smile of dawn. But I weep because of this delay.
Don't worry, my worship. I will entertain you by telling stories until daylight.
One story will be enough. Qu'est-ce qu'on fait?
Can we stop it for a while? For just a minute? I decided to read for a longer time, but we don't want to bore you, and it seems very hard for you to hear us and to follow the video at the same time, only because we are outside, I think. So we might end it here, if you all agree with us.
The galley slaves? Okay.
Then we will read with the video. Okay, the next one.
Okay.
The next one is called... It's called The Galley Slaves.
Panza, did I not tell you that my assistance would soon be needed? Look at those poor unfortunates who walk bound in chains.
Panza, they are going to the galleys, criminals, prostitutes, maybe even murderers.
Whatever their crime, they alone can judge them. And whoever dares to put them in chains, do not call them judges. In all honesty, I cannot shut my eyes while passing by human creatures who obviously need my help. Let us approach and ask each one the reason. Rest.
Panza, if they had the strength, the courage, and the intelligence of Gina di Spasamonte, they would not be here.
You, the one with such gentle manners, I assume some injustice has brought you here? Allow me to carry your ball and chain.
Prisoner one, poverty is my only crime, my knighthood. After I spurned the advances of the master, he declared I was a prostitute, and I was arrested. My name is Angela.
Angela. The well-named angel of these poor unfortunates. You suffer great injustices because of your virtue.
Prisoner one night, I was not sentenced for my virtue, but for my firm stand. Panza, may Gina di Passamonte help you.
And your old woman, do tell us, is this where you belong?
prisoner too. Poor, without a doubt, since I am here. But old? I'm no older than your knighthood, who carries a shield and a lance like a young fool. Attend to staying in your saddle and keep your pity for yourself. That's all I have to say.
I used the wrong words. Forgive me and tell me your story. This is not time for politeness.
Prisoner 4, leave her alone. She's furious because she confessed to several crimes. There is no greater shame for a prisoner. Panza, may she be born again in the form of Gina de Passamonte.
And you, with a sad face and brisk walk, is it not by some error that you find yourself here?
Prisoner 3, I aborted an undesired child. I was arrested as a murderer.
Here is one of your murderers, Panza. Look at her face and her expression. What do you have to say?
She killed or not? Yes, I did, and I would do it again.
There is no murder. There is no crime, so long as what we kill has no soul. And while an infant is unborn, it cannot have a soul. Otherwise, we have to assume that a pregnant woman has two souls. And believe me, that is a theologically insurmountable problem.
I know nothing about souls. I don't feel mine until I stay too long without eating.
Go in peace, my friend, and have courage until your freedom, which is close at hand.
There is another one who is not Gina de Passamonte, if I can judge by her appearance.
Don't be afraid. Come closer. What have they done? What have you done to deserve such punishment?
I killed a man. His act was so palpable and odious that they did not dare demand my head.
By the burning fire, I like you. There would not be any more victims if every victim were like you.
Indeed, they would all be in iron. Are you Gina de Passamonte?
Are you going to tell me who this Gina de Passamonte is with whom you're driving me crazy?
Gina de Passamonte, it's I, and I can see that I am better known by your squire than by yourself. Heaven itself. Gina de Passamonte, your pity is misplaced since you can't do anything for us. But I will tell you why I'm here. When my rich family decided to marry me off, I went away and became a highway robber instead.
I will not lecture you. You will be saved along with the others.
Don't think that I am unworthy of your good care. I stole only from the rich, and with the riches, like Molly Cutpurse, I tried to rectify the injustice inflicted upon the poor.
Really?
Really. You can ask Vera de Mirador. She's here on her own accord, even after I exacted ransom from her family. Now, she's helping me write my memoirs.
I would be curious to read them. Just tu veux faire le puppet show ou quoi? Tu veux faire le puppet show?
Oh, je suis tellement mal en anglais.
Oh, it's the chin wash. This is the chin washing, and it's a silent scene.
Quixote had to have a wash to attend a banquet.
The next scene is the puppet show. The narrator.
These two stories presented here to you, dear spectators, was taken word for word from ancient Greek history and the epics of the poets, and as you know, it's on everyone's lips. It tells of the liberation of the Queen Hippolyte by her lover Antiope when she was a prisoner in Athens at the hands of the Greeks. Here you see the Greek boat which raised anchor, taking the Queen Hippolyte away, even though she boarded at the Thermodontic ambassador. That man over there, rubbing his hands together, is Theseus, overjoyed by his treachery. Here, you see him welcoming Hippolyte with many honors. He bids her to come on board. That other queen who appears on the post is Antiope, Hippolyte's lover. See how she grieves over the disappearing boat. See how she throws her crown to the ground. See how she sits upon it. See how she beats her chest in anger. See how she's immediately surrounded by bellicose Amazons and how enraged they are at the Greeks. See them gathering. See how they swear to reach Attica and Athens and wreak havoc on both plain and city until their queen is returned to them. Now, see the tower of Theseus' palace. Hippolyte is tied up inside, deprived of her weapons. See how her patience melts like snow in the sun, and how this injury waits upon her. See what furious glances she contemplates
the Greek. See how often her eyes turn toward the plain to see her friends and avengers arrive, and how once the plain is empty and the dust glistens.
Be brief. Go straight to the facts in your story. Don't be swept away by the details.
The person coming into view here, you must recognize her, is Queen Antiope. And if smoke comes from her mouth, and if her nostrils, it is because anger and pain have set her chest in motion like a forge. And if she had a beard, she would tear it out.
What is the meaning of this beard story here?
Isn't it customary to mention a beard when a majesty is involved? Queen Boadicea had a red beard, according to what they say. Queen Hatshepsut wore a pharaonic beard. Charlemagne had one, and the Romans were the only emperors who had bare chins.
So that's why it was easier to wash them before the great banquets. I can give you an account of the chin washing ceremony.
Permit me to return to my first duty of maintaining my audience. To my right, bound with fetters, is Queen Hippolyte, whose strength, if not her courage, decreases hour by hour because Theseus is starving her in order to break her resistance. To my left, the Thermodontine army has arrived in Athens. See how pale and weak Antiope becomes at the sight of her lover, held so tightly at Theseus' hands. Hippolyte, as you can see, draws herself up slightly and says weakly, "Too late, my friends, you have come too late. Never again will I see the banks of the Thermodon River and the walls of the beautiful Themyscira." And then during the night, after cutting the guard's throat, Antiope unties Hippolyte and carries her away. See her horse waiting at the bottom of the tower. There are eyes everywhere that have nothing to do but spy. Antiope's hastened departure with Hippolyte, her descent along the ramparts, her mount onto the saddle, all these things are reported to Theseus, who immediately sounds the alarm. Observe with what promptness he is obeyed. See the Greeks scrum themselves and see their helmets shine. See the great sorrow at the sight of the rival towers in their city, whence the Amazons began to bombard them, rendering the pursuit of Antiope problematic. Nevertheless, I fear that she and Hippolyte will be recaptured, for Theseus is leading a small battalion of soldiers with fresh horses through a secret door unknown to the Amazons. If he recaptures them, he will bring them back tied to the tail of their horse. Ah, that would be a horrible sight.
Quixote, no, never will I permit such an outrage to be committed in my presence upon so famous a lover, so brave a warrior as Antiope. Stop, infamous scoundrel, cease to pursue her, or else prepare yourself for combat.
Stop, Quixote, you aren't fighting, killing, and demolishing real Greeks.
Woe is me, you've ruined me. Everything I own is destroyed. Ah, your name is well-founded, and truly you have a sad countenance. You thus disfigured all my puppets.
I wish the people who do not believe in the value of knights errant were here. Look at what would have happened to Antiope and Hippolyte if I had not been here. They would have fallen into the hands of these Greeks. Those dogs would have committed every possible outrage upon them. So long live knight errantry above everything in the world.